Okay. And may it please the court, my name is Andrew Koenig for plaintiff appellant Vivian Siricioni. The judge's finding regarding the residual functional capacity was essentially based on the opinions of the state agency non-examining doctors, Aquino Caro and Farrell. Now, Dr. Aquino Caro reviewed a very partial file in November of 2014, and Farrell was reviewing in February 5th of 2015. My client, as the record shows, had an extensive history of substance abuse up until a final incarceration in March of 2014, and then started getting appropriate and consistent care in June of 2014. So Dr. Aquino Caro only had about, 5-6 months of consistent treatment records from treating sources, and then Dr. Farrell had it through February, which is another, 7 months. Thereafter, the treating doctors got involved. Dr. Frederick became her treating psychiatrist late February, about 2 weeks after Dr. Farrell's review of the file. Dr. Frederick treated for about 14 months, and then my client was transferred to Ventura County Behavioral Health from Dr. Frederick's care. Dr. Frederick was
cut to the chase, what was deficient about the residual functional capacity analysis? You started by mentioning that it's based on the examining physicians. And what was the error in that?
Well, the error, number one, is basing a residual functional capacity finding on non-examining physicians that didn't review the complete file and is inconsistent with the record, the treatment records that they didn't even have an opportunity to see or review prior to giving their opinion. And then the bases for the RFC finding not only did not adequately or accurately reflect those non-examining physicians because they both opine that there's 1 to 2 periods of extended of decompensation of extended duration, which the judge never addressed or refuted, which is, a judge must articulate reasons for rejecting certain opinions, and the judge just glossed over the fact that both these state agency doctors found 1 or 2 episodes of deterioration, and then on top of that reject doctors Frederick, Shamarian, and the therapist's records. All three of them gave opinions that supported the finding of disability. So basically the judge rejected three treating medical professionals' opinions over a two DDS doctors, state agency doctors that reviewed very, very small portions of the record. And the reason that the judge denied both doctors Frederick and Shamarian's opinions do not meet the specific and legitimate standard, and the therapist, Amy Maiman, did not give germane reason. For Maiman, the only reason the judge articulated was inconsistent with the records, and she's not an acceptable medical source. Well, the Revels case that was cited in the brief and the regulations 20 CFR 1527F, and Revels both talk about needing to go through the factors in 404 1527 C2 through 6. The judge absolutely just did not undertake any such analysis, just kind of summarily and vaguely rejected the therapist Maiman's records, and similarly gave, inaccurate reasons for rejecting the two treating doctors. So we have three treating sources, Frederick from 14 months, and then a year after that, Shamarian, both independently assessing them. They're in different facilities, giving rather measured not over the top at all, opinion. Out of 20 areas of functioning, both doctors, Frederick and Sumerian, only said 5 out of the 20 were the most severe limitations. The rest were varying lesser degrees. The judge interpreted that as being overly sympathetic. It was a bit, these are all very measured, very, you know, if she did not have limitations in certain areas, both of these doctors independently acknowledged that in 15 out of 20, except the 5 that were severe, the vocational expert documented in testimony, those are disabling. And the judge selectively reviewed these records and said, look, she's not, you know, she does not have X, Y, and Z limitations here. That is not the point. The point of medical records is to document, you know, severe, you know, some symptoms that are severe and notation, and also acknowledge symptoms that aren't so severe. The medical source statements accurately reveal those measured treatment records with measured opinions. Yet the judge, without any basis in the record, said these are based on sympathy, not any support in the records, which is just not an accurate review of the record.
Ms. Giacone, can I ask you a question, please?
Of course.
It appeared to me that the judge was also taking into consideration the fact that she was, well, first of all, when she was put on medication, she did substantially better and yeah. And was functioning. She was attending different groups. She was, in fact, I think she was in charge of one group that she was attending, seemed to be dealing with her issues fairly well. And I think it appeared to me, at least, that the judge in this case was looking at that and measuring that against the various doctors' opinions. I don't think he's just pulling it out of the air.
I'm sorry, that's a question. I'm sorry, I don't want to interrupt.
Well, you seem to be indicating that he was just pulling these out of the air. Would you agree with me that he was also looking at these physicians' opinions in reference to how she was behaving under her new medication, which seemed to enhance her ability substantially?
Well, no, and I think this needs to be in necessary context. For years, a couple years before getting regular treatment, my client was having substance abuse issues, being hospitalized. So from that baseline to getting regular treatment, yes, she has improved. And of course, once she was, to her credit, became clean and sober, I believe March of 14 throughout, she maintained her sobriety. Medications did help. She did do activities, but none of these are activities that would indicate any ability to sustain 40-hour work weeks. She was, I think the board, the activity you're referring to is she was a member of Narcotics Anonymous, which was part of her treatment. To her credit, she was very involved in Narcotics Anonymous and actually served on the board up for that. But that is intermittent. It does not, you know, it is not ability to sustain. Yes, she has improvement. Those medical source statements show improvement. 15 out of the 20 areas of category are not disabling. 5 are, according to the vocational expert's testimony. She does not need to be incapacitated. She needs to be precluded from sustained 40-hour work week, with all 3 treating sources have documented, and they're very well aware of that improvement from the baseline of going to hospitalization to now. And I'm sorry, I've gone over. I don't have my 2 minutes. I don't know if I'll still have any rebuttal time.
We'll give you a little bit of time for rebuttal. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you. I hope that was responsive, Judge Ezra.
It was. Yeah. Thank you.
Ms. Clark? You need to unmute yourself. You're muted.
Can you hear me?
Yes, thank you. You may proceed. Now we can't hear you.
Oh, well.
Ms. Clark, we can't hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Yes. Please proceed.
Oh. Okay. My apologies. This is a straightforward case about a younger woman who had some difficulties primarily with methamphetamine that landed her in jail and in treatment. And in March of 2014, when she was incarcerated for the last time, she, for a three-month period, she decided she was going to change her life and get clean and sober. And the evidence after her incarceration from March through June of 2014 shows that she was doing relatively well and was fairly functional and was engaged in numerous activities and maintained on medication. And the evidence shows that she does not wish to work. She's not interested in finding a job. Throughout, she represented that she doesn't want to work. She's not interested in employment. Her parents are paying her rent. At one point, she said her life is pretty easy. She doesn't really know what she wants to do other than pursue her hobbies. The evidence doesn't show that this is an individual who's unable to work. It shows that this is an individual that once she became sober and abstained from methamphetamine use, simply chose not to work. And that's not to say that she didn't have limitations, which are accounted for in the RFC, but these limitations were not disabling.
Counsel, could I ask a question? Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
May I?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead, Judge.
I was just going to ask Ms. Clark, would you be responsive specifically to the arguments made by opposing counsel, particularly the arguments he's making about the opinions of the treating doctors in the preparation of the RFC?
Certainly. Well, first, the RFC isn't based on any single physician's opinion, and there's no requirement that it be based on any single physician's opinion, and I think the ALJ explains that in the decision quite well. Plaintiff contends that the RFC is based inordinately on these two non-examining physician opinions, state agency opinions from Dr. Quino Caro and Dr. Farrell. In fact, the ALJ found that plaintiff was more limited than either of those doctors opined. The ALJ agreed with their findings that the individual could perform simple, repetitive work. Claimant also says that the ALJ did not, that those physicians both determined that claimant had 1 to 2 episodes of decompensation, and the ALJ did not consider that. That's actually inaccurate. The ALJ found that claimant had no episodes of decompensation and explained the reasons why. That's on page 35 of the decision. The ALJ explained how episodes of decompensation are defined in the regulations and showed that claimant has not had any episodes of decompensation of extended duration as determined in the regulations. So the ALJ did explain that reasoning. Claimant also alleges that the ALJ improperly rejected 3 opinions from treating clinicians, and the ALJ gave good reasons for rejecting those opinions. Primarily, they were not supported by objective findings. The ALJ discussed the medical records at length, and then in discussing the weight to give those opinions, explained that they were not, that he considered that the opinions of Dr. Schmerian and Dr. Frederick were treating physicians, but he noted that treating physician weight opinions are entitled to significant weight only if they're supported by objective medical evidence, and that is not the case here. That's what the regulations require, consideration of the extent to which the opinions are supported and explained and consistent with the record as a whole. And in this case, the opinions that claimant wishes claims should have been credited were simply checklist, check-the-box opinions that didn't include narrative or supporting explanation. So the fact that they're not supported by evidence of record is an appropriate reason for discounting those opinions and giving greater weight to the opinions.
Counsel, may I interrupt just for
Thank
a second?
Thank you.
As I understand, the ALJ rejected it. One of the basis for rejecting the treating physician's opinion was because the treatment was conservative and routine. And I'm not sure I've seen that as a basis for rejecting a treating physician's opinion before. Do you have a case?
I don't have a case offhand, but under the regulation, if you look at the regulations, I could probably find a case and get back to you on that. But under the regulations, in considering the treatment relationship, the ALJ considers the nature and extent of treatment. That's in 1527C2.
Right. I agree with you on that. You don't need to spend anything. But the fact that they chose to use conservative treatment alone, it seems to me a little odd to reject it on that basis. The other thing, as I understand it, too, the second reason was based on certain notes and perhaps inconsistency with her daily activities. Those are the three reasons I have. I don't see the checklist you mentioned among the three reasons. Am I missing it?
No, the ALJ doesn't specify checklist. The ALJ says that the opinions are basically there's no supportive evidence. And if you look at the opinions, they don't include any narrative explanation or reference to supporting evidence. It was my characterization of the opinions as checklist.
Okay, thank you.
Ms. Cook, I'm sorry, Ms. Clark. I don't know why I called you Cook. Ms. Clark, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
All right. You've characterized, I think I would be fair in saying that you've characterized her behavior during this period of time as being somewhat inclined not to do anything and to seek Social Security benefits in order to maintain that rather relaxed lifestyle. And I'm having a little bit, and even though this isn't dispositive, I'm having a little difficulty trying to square this with the subsequent finding by the ALJ, by a different ALJ and the board, that she was fully disabled. So how do you square them?
Your Honor, there was a more than a full year gap between the date of the ALJ's decision in this case that we're looking at and in the finding that she was subsequently disabled. And I think that the subsequent decision was based on new evidence. The ALJ in the second hearing specifically said that greater limitations were based on evidence received at the hearing that shows greater limitations. And the ALJ in the subsequent hearing specifically noted that in October of 2000, must have been October of 2018, that claimant was hospitalized for 4 days on a 5150 because she was a danger to herself and others. So that evidence specifically supported the finding of disability on the subsequent claim, and that's different evidence, and shows that her condition is worse than it was during the period at issue in this case.
Counsel, what is the significance of?
Go ahead.
Counsel, what is the significance of the subsequent grant compared to the case that we have? Is there any inference we should draw with respect to the case that's in front of us?
No, Your Honor, because of the year gap, you can certainly consider the subsequent determination. But I think if you look at the guidance in Bruton, 268 F3rd, 824, you'll see that the new opinion is based on new medical evidence, a different time period, and it doesn't provide a basis to remand in this case.
So you're not seeking remand. You're not seeking remand in this case.
No, sir.
Very well.
Okay. Your time has expired, counsel. Thank you for your argument, unless there are further questions from the panel. Okay, seeing none, thank you. And Mr. Koenig, we will give you your 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor. In response to Your Honor's inquiry, Judge Thomas, the Treviso case that I cited in the brief at page 677 as far as routine and conservative treatment says, quote, the failure of a treating physician to recommend a more aggressive course of treatment absent more is not a legitimate reason to discount the physician's subsequent medical opinion. The problem with mental health cases is you're always able to pick and choose certain isolated pieces of evidence to show improvement or higher functioning. You need to look at the longitudinal evidence. That's under the Ganin case. The fact that she was in a 5150 in October of 2018, considering the entire length of treatment, is relevant. It's not, someone does not wake up and is a danger to himself or others and needs an involuntary commitment. This is part of the spectrum of waxing and waning of symptoms, of mental symptoms, as is noted in the Garrison case. And I think the fact that her opposing counsel brings up not wanting to work, you know, need the casual lifestyle, is part and parcel of her fear of working and her needing to maintain a controlled lifestyle. It is all addressed at ER page 126, the post-hearing letter from Dr. Shamarian saying she's in avoidance. She plays 8 hours of video games. That is not evidence of her functioning. It's an evidence of her maladaptive coping skills. She tries to stay away from reality in a safe, measured, controlled environment. That's the only way she can function. So, of course, records say things like she is happy with her life the way it is. She does not want to work because if she jumped off that cliff, she knows the deterioration would happen. This needs to be all viewed in context. And Dr. Shamarian's letter summarizes it to the point. And I think it needs to be very well, credited there that this judge did not have the opportunity to see this evidence submitted, that letter submitted to the appeals council. A remand just to pass is warranted. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The case just argued will be submitted for decision, and we'll proceed to the next case on the oral argument calendar.